Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, they are available on Spotify. Friends, this coming January, Film Sociology turns 12 years old, and it's been a very, very fun ride, and I hope you're staying safe, hope you're staying healthy, hope you're staying sane, hope you're being good to one another, hope you're watching some good movies at home, or if you're adventurous enough to go out, that's great, but just be safe. But when it comes to the show, segments come and go, guests come and go, voices come and go, but I get really excited when a film sociology tradition continues. It's not just for Thanksgiving. It now covers Thanksgiving through New Year's that I have this gentleman on the show. You know him as an Emmy-nominated culinary personality. He's been on Food Network, Cooking Channel, ABC, QVC, Amazon. He should be on the NHL Live segment. He is my favorite Maple Leaf, married to my favorite Red Wing, and it's so good to have him back on the show. Danny Boone is here. Happy December greetings to you, Danny.
Happy Christmas.
Yes.
Yes. Did you know what? Megan and I were just talking about this, right? It has been 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years. And what a great tradition, because we've never met.
I know.
And we keep doing this. And it just proves that when you stalk someone long enough, dreams will come true. And
on both ends.
And on both ends.
See, around here, we call it, it's not called stalking. It's called very focused affection.
Oh, so it's the autistic version of it. Right, okay.
So Danny is talking to us from upstate New York, where at the time of this recording, it's dumping snow. Kids are home from school. Are they, the kids are in school, or some of the kids
okay, so I've got Novely sitting right next to me. We're playing Play-Doh right now.
Yeah, we heard it in the intro.
In the intro. Don't eat this. Don't eat that. That's where I'm at right now. Yes, honey, I know. It's so squidgy. And then I've got Remy, who's just got off the bus. And as I said to you before, as we started recording, it's like he didn't want to come off the bus because we've got things like it's dumping snow right now. It's about 6 inches. And I was like, it's snow. Get off the bus. You know what I mean? And I said, you know, the kids don't know they've got it made these days. You know, like, yeah. Blue. So I do apologize to the folks at home who are going to hear this. I will be in, you know, doing some sort of schizophrenic parent thing.
That's all right.
Halfway through this conversation. But then again, as I said, my ADHD is going to kick in, so you don't know which way is up anyway. So it's all good.
That's all right. Sorry.
It's all right, baby. So what's been going on?
Well, I was about to say, I think this year, this year has been a year. But I know you and I are have something very much in common, Mr. Bond. Is at least we have a house. We have some real estate to be stuck in with our family. Now, granted, your family is bigger than mine, but at least we've been able to have some. I couldn't fathom doing this with a youngin's your youngin's age, and or doing this in an apartment. I couldn't fathom this.
And the strange thing is, like, living in New York to living where we live now, like, me and Maggie sometimes look at each other and go, how would you do this in an apartment in New York or in Chicago or wherever you, like, I don't know how you would do it. Thank goodness we have an outside space. Thank goodness we've been able to, I mean, I'm not being funny, but that helps get over the, you know, we've got three kids under seven. So 7-4-1. And so, yeah, it's been fun. It really, really has been fun. It's been, you know, they said to us, it'd be the great, you're never going to get these moments back. I really would cash that in for another bottle of Jack right now. I really would.
Gentleman Jack.
Gentleman Jack.
The good stuff. The really good stuff.
Yeah. Because seriously, it has been, yeah, very challenging. And homeschool, I mean, the parents, I think every parent, I mean, like you, you've got a daughter in college, and God, I don't even know how they're doing it, because it's impacted older kids' lives the problem is we build it all up, don't we? This is your moment. This is your graduation. This is your first year of college.
Yep.
Well, at least you've got another four. You know what I mean? Look, think about it like that. For us, it's been a continuous struggle, you know, homeschooling and all those type of things. And, you know, I lost, losing work and everything like that. It really, really impacted everybody. I don't think not one person was not affected, were they? So it's a case of you just count your chickens this time of year and just say thank you very much.
Exactly.
I'm very, very lucky to have what I got, right? Exactly. Yes. Yes. I just made her a gingerbread Play-Doh man, and she devoured it, which, again, you can't do. We bought this stuff cheap from China. It's going to be toxic. Don't do that, all right? Okay.
Well, in our house, as you mentioned, yeah, my daughter is just finished her first semester of college at as we call it, Loyola University Richmond campus. And and what she was able to do, I mean, she refurbished her room. The dining room area is kind of her workspace as well. She has her little schedule up on the wall. It looks like my wife's office. And so I know when to not cook and when to not, or cook loudly, as I've been known to do, because I also play music when I cook. So I know when she's doing stuff. So she doesn't feel like a 13-year high school student.
Right.
And then also when it came to assignments or homework, we would check in and say, are we eating as a trio or as a duo? You know, are you coming down or not? And she's gotten more space, even though we've been cooped up in the house.
Right.
That's hard to do with the 7-4-1.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what I mean. And when you get to the talking of food, which is obviously,
we'll get there. Yes. Subject,
yeah. But it's been very challenging because we've got, we have not been able to go out to eat. We haven't done that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like so bored with, because for us to have a frozen pizza it sounds, for some people it's like, what, you don't have frozen pizza? Like, for us to have a frozen pizza on a Friday night is like a ginormous controversy in our house, because we cook everything from scratch.
Right.
So cooking three meals a day for your kids, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then you're coming up with the same crap every day. Like, I'm dying to go. I would gladly go to the Olive Garden if I could, just for some change. And I have never stepped foot in an Olive Garden. I have never stepped foot in any chain restaurant, because I just don't do those places.
Right.
You know, but, and I sound so pretentious, but to be absolutely honest, folks, if you can do it yourself better, why would you?
Right.
I mean, you know.
Can you get carry out at local places where you're living?
But this is the thing, Matt. This is the thing that rips us apart.
Okay.
You know, once you order it, it's going to be condensated and cold. So I can't order my burger from, I'd rather make my burger than order it from, say, Red Robin, because by the time I get it, it's not what it would be, the experience in the restaurant.
Right. But as far as local businesses, like local eateries,
yeah,
brew pubs, that sort of thing. I get it.
We've tried it, but then you're disappointed through it. So that's the, and then my best one, my absolute favorite we had, and you'll love this. This is not even anecdotally, this is only true in our neighborhood. My neighbor got a DoorDash or a Grubhub or whatever it would be. And the guy rocks on up with five people in the car.
Oh, jeez.
And he said, what's going on? He goes, oh, I'm doing Uber at the same time.
Oh, my gosh. You got to work.
In a pandemic? In a pandemic?
Here's your contaminated dinner.
Yeah.
Wow.
so I was like, well, we won't be doing that then either, will we? No, because we just can't be trusted. You know, the kids can't be trusted. So we've had some, yeah, but it's been, you just say, like, the daily grind is just, I think, gets up to everybody. So when it comes to entertainment, you know, it's been interesting.
Well, before this, before we get into that, what does Megan like from you cooking, and what does the 7-year-old, the 4-year-old, and the 1-year-old like from you cooking?
Well, we're dictated by the 7, 4, and 1. So let's put that. So the funny thing is, it's like, and the other thing is, you're not cooking just one meal. You're cooking 3 meals sometimes.
Yep.
Because we basically just keep it simple. Protein, a different protein, a different starch, and it goes basically, and we get in a cycle through it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that the kids have then matured and said, actually, you know what, I'm bored. They've said they're bored of this. So then we put something in front of them, and then they've changed it. But we really keep to the, you know, that everyone's happy to be fed.
Yes.
I think that's the most important thing. I don't know about Megan. Megan tries to, because Megan's working from home, so she actually comes into the kitchen, and though she complains about it, I know that she kind of likes the come down through the day. Like she basically just decompresses.
Oh yeah. Okay.
From making dinner, but we actually come to the point last night. We said that we looked at each other and went, "I absolutely hate this part of the day," because we've taken an hour to make dinner, and then in 5 minutes that they have spread it all over the walls.
It's like wrapping a gift.
It is. There's such an anticlimax, and Megan says, "I don't even enjoy food anymore." And I was like, I feel you, because even when you do, it's such a repetitive thing that you can't even have another experience to make you appreciate what you can do or what you can't do. So because it's now second nature,
mm-hmm.
you know, I felt such a failure as a professional culinary personality when I say that, but it's true. It's the reality of it.
I think in this case, it's where, like in our house, the pantry has become essential, because if we are going to have the same proteins, we put a different rub, we put a different marinade, we do a different mix, something, anything.
Yeah. Pasta, rice, potato.
Yep.
Pasta, rice, potato. But then it's different potatoes. Then, you know, potatoes.
Yep.
But actually, I love this time of year because I use gourds and squash way, way more so than potatoes. And we, like last night, we did acorn squash. Have you ever had a stomp, which is a Belgian dish, which is basically mashed potatoes with carrot?
Oh, really? So, okay.
Yeah. And they basically garlic butter, mashed potatoes, and then they basically mash the carrots and the potatoes all at the same time together. And it's another way of getting the kids to actually eat the carrots in a fun way. And so we do that, but then we actually now we do a blend of like parsnip cauliflower and acorn squash all together with garlic butter. Awesome.
Ooh, nice.
And then our favorite cheese to use in all cooking is wassin, which is a garlic and herb cheese, like a soft cheese. Everything gets that.
Wow.
In that. To say our kids they may be fussy, but their palate will always be robust.
Absolutely. And especially, with cheese, that's hard because it has to look right. It has to look right, taste right, or that sort of thing. But the fact, if you can expand their dairy palate, the one in our house is, because I still make a smoked Gouda and bacon mashed potatoes.
Shut up.
And that, I always say that that kicks stove toppings butt, takes its lunch money, and sends it on its way.
That sounds delicious.
It is. But
on a day like I have here, that's exactly what I want.
Absolutely. Oh. You don't peel. You keep the skin on. We usually do reds, and it's amazing. So
I didn't know this turned into a 0800 food porn line. Because now I'm like, oh my God. Like,
I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you what you're wearing. So we're not going to do that.
No, you're telling me what I'm
wearing. Going back a bit, what did you guys do for Thanksgiving? Because I got a story for you, but I want to hear yours first.
This is the funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's only three kids and two adults, and because we have so many turkey farmers in upstate, they were trying to convince everybody to buy a full turkey.
Yeah.
So Megan comes in, she goes, "Let's make it an occasion this year and get ourselves a full turkey." And I went, "Meg, for the last 10 years we've been together, we have only done a crown of two breasts because that is just enough. That we don't need all the leftovers." I mean, like, this is me thinking of the cheap chef, you know, the economist that
yeah.
I am. I believe in helping the local economy, but I'm not going to go buy a 20-pound turkey just for the sake of it, right?
Okay.
So I rock on up and... I had to go to 12 different supermarkets to find a turkey crown. So I went to my guy doesn't have one that I normally go to. He doesn't have one, so I have to go shopping around. Megan is on the app of Target, of Walmart, of Wegmans. She is hunting down a crown like nobody's business.
It's like a procedural drama on CBS.
it's unbelievable. And she's like, and she's sending me here and she's sending me that. There's no turkeys. But he said there was a turkey here. There's no turkey here. And then you walk in there and they go, "Well, don't trust the app." It's like, what's the point of having an app if you can't trust the app? So you're going through all of that. And then the holiday frustrations build up. And so anyway, I'm walking down the street and I see my neighbors and they're rolling around. And I said, "What's going on with you guys? Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?" "Yeah. Yeah, we walked out and we got a 25-pound turkey." "Oh wow! Did you have a lot? Did you keep to the suggested amount of people to come over, six? "Oh no, it was just us two. We had a 25-pound turkey."
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I
and
wish.
I'm like, "Don't tell my wife. Whatever you do, don't tell my wife."
Yeah. Until she hears this show.
Yeah. She's like, "See, I told you. Everybody was going to make an occasion of it." And I was like, "I'm not being funny, but I can only get through two breaths,
So we had a 14-pound young turkey. So the and the price was down, which was nice. Emma, it's been great to see Emma take charge in the kitchen. I was her sous chef for this. So we did a dry brine. At her request, she also had watched a video on YouTube, one of her vloggers that she likes, as far as preparing the bird. So what she wanted to do was she wanted to cut off the limbs and then roast it so it'll take less time.
Right.
So take off the drumsticks and the wings. So she started, and what she couldn't finish, I would finish. So that's because that's the sous chef's job. Now, this is the first time, and we did this the night before. We did this, obviously the night before, and then you brine it, and then you, in this case, it turned out to be about 3 hours in the oven. So, this is the first time, Danny, that I've worked in the kitchen, and it felt like surgery. Because of hacking the limbs, I'm sopping up liquid on the island. That's all I'm doing is applying pressure and gauze and doing everything. My dad's a surgeon, and it's the first time I felt like I was in his shoes to get these limbs off. And if she couldn't get it, and could I finish it? And so finally, there's that feeling when you finally put the bird in the oven and, the weight leaves your back and your shoulders. We got that twice, because once we got all of the limbs hacked off the bird, we were like, "Okay, all right, we got this." The other problem. Go ahead.
What was the moment that you went, "This wasn't such a good idea"?
No, I think it was an okay idea, because we still got through it. I wanted to do a wet brine, but she insisted on a dry. And once we got the limbs hacked off, and we were exhaling and looking at each other. Yeah, we still love each other. That's good.
Yeah,
and then she and I said, I'm going to get a bird probably at Christmas. And she goes, and you can do a wet brine. And I said, thank you. Now, the problem was the video that she saw, and I was going to ask you this because I've seen, you know, you have plenty of videos on YouTube and DannyBoom.com, is she finds this challenge from this person that she likes and then, but doesn't tell us how long to cook the bird. I had to go on. So it's kind of a Frankenstein's creation of, okay, this website does this and this website does that. And so we started at 3 and hope for the best. And I have a turkey cannon. So you put the carcass on the tube, right, and you pour red wine down the pipe. And then you put the limbs on. Anyway, and it turned out fine. But it was just that because it was a challenge, we weren't given the information on, okay, now that you've, you know, amputated your bird, you cook it at this temp for this time.
Well, it sounds, A, that the YouTuber shorted you, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, the old adage is with the turkey, it's a pound per minute.
Yep.
I think the problem with the information, though, is, I'm just going back to the inadequacies of the information that's out there. People forget that not everybody knows.
Yeah.
And what they're doing clickbait is like trying to lead you onto the next video all the time. And it's like, well, you don't have to clickbait me to say that I need to know how to figure out this. You could just put it in the video. I'd have, you know, shared it more.
Yeah.
But what is your, this is the thing. I've never brined a turkey in my life.
In this case, following the instructions, it was just, we did, salt, pepper, and a little sugar,
right,
and then rubbed it all over everything. It did turn out to be a little on the salty side, but not enough for me to text you in a panic like I've done before add honey to the mix. So, the other thing was, I guess the other that was, I was relieved is because we had amputated the bird, I didn't have to get up at 5 a.m. to put the bird in the oven. So I put it in at 10 and by 1 it was resting.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, I would be one that would probably add a myriad of spices. In fact, the brining kit I have has that, and we'll see if we do that in December, if not January. I think we're doing a roast for Christmas. Right. So,
I mean, all I've ever done with turkey, and it's the truth, is I take a knife and I pierce the skin, and I put about 2 to 3 sticks of butter underneath the skin. And then I take the same knife, paring knife, and I pierce the breasts and pierce the legs, and then I put in the garlic and butter, and then I stuff my turkey always with fruit.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah, because my I think it's like an inverted way of brining, because I always see brining as like a step. The turkey's already filled, or the chicken is already filled with liquid brine anyway to bring the weight up, so that's a buyer beware sign. They do that in processing. That's why I've never done it, because really, if you're cooking it right, it should always come out moist and beautiful.
Right.
I know, ladies, I said moist. I do apologize. But the over point is it's what you infuse it with, and by putting the fruit into the center of the carcass, you actually create a condensation, a steam, and so this steam ripples out through the bird and cooks it, steams it from inside out, and the butter then just basically keeps everything cooking around. But I've always found is just that it's the tenting is also when you finish roast, you basically start your turkey high temperature, you get your color on the skin, then you drop it and go slow and low,
right,
for the amount of time. Is actually, I always place a glass of wine or a bottle of beer in the bottom, right about an hour at the end. And then if it is too dry, if you've maybe overcooked it or whatever, it's a really good saving hack, is what you do is then you tent it with foil, and you tent it with the foil, and then what happens is the steam that the beer or the wine has done is, A, makes you gravy, starts making you gravy.
Nice.
With all that beautiful fat, and you've created your own stock with all the fruit. You've got the fruit, the butter, and then the wine and the beer in there, and all of that creates this beautiful steam bath. You tent it over with the foil, and always remember with foil, it goes shiny down first, not because it reflects the heat. Who knew? and NASA, and then give it an hour and let that steam permeate through the actual carcass, and you always come up with the best, most juiciest turkey ever.
So what kind of fruit do you put in?
I actually do a nice citrus blend.
All right, good.
I do oranges. Mm-hmm. I do grapefruit. I do maybe a small grapefruit because I don't want it to be too bitter. Mm-hmm. But I always do like bloody orange, like red oranges.
Oh, yeah.
And then if I can't invite up and got a grapefruit, I do some lemons. And always apple.
Okay.
Because apple balances the citrus. Mm-hmm. Like I said to you, so Matt once rang me about a problem that he had with a dish, and it's always my go-to is a spoonful of honey.
Yep.
So if it's too spicy, add a spoonful of honey. If it's too salty, add a spoonful of honey. And the same with turkey or when you're making a gravy, you need a sugar balance. So
yep.
If it's too acidic, you need sugar. So that's why you generally put a mirepoix in, like the celery, the carrots, because they have those natural salts and sugars. But apples go way further because they're not got such a high concentrate of sugar, but they basically balance out everything and also make everything taste, less, it's not like a cidery aspect to it, but
sure.
They pull in the spices and stuff.
So, and then when you mentioned like a can of beer, like it almost sounds like a beer can chicken aspect of there's extra moisture, extra flavor.
No.
Okay.
Let's not get so gross.
You haven't taken a bird and a big old oil can of Foster's and just rammed that in there?
No. I leave all the ramming for after. What we do is I generally use I just realized how pretentious I'm going to sound. Because you went Foster's and I was like, yeah, Foster's.
No, I wasn't even
to put my fire out.
There is a friend of mine, a musician friend of mine from Australia who says I'm going to clean it up, but he says it's dingo urine.
Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, like, oh my God. No, but me and my beautiful wife and I were very, I think very particular about our beer because what we did was we went to Belgium once.
Ah.
And we
ruined you.
Yeah. I mean, we did. It did. I mean, I live in the middle of independent beer country. Like, I live right in the middle of in Rochester, New York, where I live, there is 90 breweries that are independently owned. And I can't go into any one of them because I hate to say it, but I can't get close. We can't get close to drinking the Belgian blondes that we like to drink.
Wow.
So, you know. Yeah, I'd love a shock top. That'd be great. But but then if I can't do if you haven't got a less blonde, which is the most beautiful, easy to drink beer. But what the difference is, and I'm gonna say, not to sound pretentious, but to sound like you know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with wine. I don't want a very acidic beer. I don't want a over hoppy beer. You need something that's right middle of the road, refreshing, clear, and not too active. And that's why we always use, I use less in everything, basically, because it doesn't give you a beery aftertaste.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's no IPA-ness to it, and which I cannot. And I know it's like I'm speaking cardinally, like it's a sin, but I cannot. I don't really do IPAs. It has to be like a clean, fresh flavor. But I mean, everyone's different, right?
At the end
of the day, if you like it, then. And it's your favorite beer, throw in. But I guess Coors Light is one. Somebody said, "Shall I try that?" I went, "No, there's nothing to it."
Yep,
it just tastes like a can of aluminium, right? So what you need is you need something. So like a Blue Moon would be good if you're just gonna
okay.
want to experiment with American, Belgian would be a great one. But we do that, or you know, a good glass of Pinot Grigio always goes a long way.
So, but you put it in the oven with the bird,
in the pan, yeah
in the pan.
Pour the liquid, yeah.
Okay.
And then basically it deglazes the pan for you while it's cooking through, and then the tent is you cover it in the foil,
got it,
and crimp down the edges, and then it creates that beautiful steam bath. And then literally, if you do it right, within an hour and 20 minutes of the last hour and 20 minutes of your cooking time, the meat will fall off the bone.
Excellent. Very good. Very, very good. So what will you do for Christmas?
that is the great debate right now.
Uh-oh.
If I can, I will ask live on air, if you'd like.
Yes.
Meg, what meat are we going to have for Christmas, do you think? Well, because Megan has a big Polish-Ukrainian background, so it's we did pork 1 year with pierogies last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was at, like, our Christmas thing, and we got really heavily into pierogies in the last year. But I'm kind of going for prime rib this year. Prime rib or a nice rack of lamb.
Oh.
The rack of lamb to me is my always my go-to, but
yeah.
I think in the house a mini. Maybe a beef Wellington or something. Might be more fun. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I've just come up with that. Is that like the sound of that?
There you go, an exclusive here at Film Sociology.
She gives me the maybe.
All right. Yeah. Oh, that's... Yeah. That's I love spousal maybes.
Yeah, but you look.
Nice.
I'm a man who's an island. I have to accept this is the terms and conditions of that life.
Exactly. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Danny Boom is with me. You can go to DannyBoom.com and see all of the things that he has going rolled up his sleeves. You have been very active on social media recently, especially on Facebook that I've seen. Yeah. But I know the Academy is up and flying in these trying times, right?
Yeah. Well, so the Gastronauts Academy is my cooking school. And... The idea basically behind the Academy was that anybody can cook, anybody can have a tasting experience, learn about wine, beer, and food, and spirits. Don't ever forget the spirits.
No.
But obviously because of COVID, it was like, well, no one really can attend an experience or a class. So we actually flipped that and made it a completely virtual experience. And now what we do is you buy a class from thegastronautsacademy.com. What we do is we send you a box of ingredients, and then you tune in live to the designated class. And it's basically like you're revisiting me on Food Network, and you're actually cooking along or tasting along or even in it joining the conversation. It's all live.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a really, really good time doing it. We're just at around 20,000 spaces sold.
Excellent.
Since September. And the most important thing about that is it's really cool because once you buy it, we do a variety of different classes. There's 10 main classes that you can buy as a package or you can buy individually. And then through the holidays, we've got some special ones like we did kids cooking. So we've got edible slime and sushi. And then we've got a baking school that starts online from January. But the whole point is, it's been incredible to see people interact with you and food. It's been this like great thing where people, it's like, imagine, I don't want to do a Zoom meeting. I don't want to do, one of these office type feeling things. So we had to create an experience. So for you to get your hands dirty with the box and, you know, you've got all your essential ingredients in front of you. Then we send you a shopping list of anything else you may need. And then to actually get the recipes in ahead, people get excited. And then, like, we did this a dessert class, and I've got to say, it stuck with me like crazy. Everybody turned on their cameras to show what they made.
Yep.
And everybody was tasting, and everybody was oohing and ahhing, and, oh, mine's better than yours, and ha-ha-ha, and I've never met you, but this is great, you know. And if I didn't feel worse, now I feel better. But everybody really, really interacted with it, and it was the first time I've actually said, this is actually going to work. And people have got their head around it now that virtually – I don't have to leave my home, and I can be safe, and I can do something and still enjoy learning and experiencing things with other people. And I think that's the human connect that we really miss. And when you put food and people together and you really find a way for them to connect, you know, gastronauts really managed to do that.
I wondered, when things started to go down and you know, folks were losing work. We've all lost some aspect of work, whatever. But there's also been those moments, and it sounds like it happens here, where one door closes and another screen pops up.
The only thing, and I think I said this. I did this actually in a social media post, as the doors of the restaurant that I was operating closed, the, you know, my CFO said, we cannot sustain this, so we're going to close. We're going to give the lease up. We're going to close. We're going to move on. So that left me unemployed, one of my many jobs in life. But what it did do, it was like a case of, and I said this, I said, you cannot give up. You mm-hmm. cannot not create. You cannot stand in your own way. And you got to get up. You got to shake yourself off, and you got to find a window. And you make, you either, when I used to play hockey, they used to say to the goalies, you make your own luck. Don't rely on the rest of the team. You make your own luck by the position you're going to be in, or the you thinking ahead of the next play. And that kind of sticks with me. Is like you have to think about where you are and where and what you can do next. And money will always come, but opportunity is what you must take. And so I took the opportunity. I mean, it's not been easy. Nothing's been easy, but you just got to keep at it. Haven't you? You know
exactly.
And you know, my mum and dad's hairdressers got closed down, and you know, it was like that business has been ours for 50 years. Sorry. And you know, it was a case of what we're going to do. Yep. And it was like, well, my mum went in the next day, redecorated the whole shop, and said, "I'm ready to open when we're ready to open." Like, so you take your time, you reevaluate, you repurpose yourself, you see a vision, and you go for it. And if anyone's listening, I've got to say that is that you've got to be a mantra of life. Just don't stop moving. Push through. Keep going. Because when you're going through hell, keep on going. That's what they say, right?
Exactly. I believe a fish once said, just keep swimming.
That's right. That's right. Just keep swimming.
Yeah, how many? I'm sure you. There has to be. You've had to have watched that at least 100 times.
I think 101 times over the COVID situation. Yeah.
When Emma was younger, there was that period, and I know you've been through it, where she wanted. Fortunately for her, there were two films that she alternated, but she could watch them every day for like 6 months, and they were Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo. And I keep telling myself it could have been a lot worse.
Okay.
I know you went through a Peppa Pig phase.
Oh no, we've gone through Cars 1, 2, and 3.
Oh yeah.
We went through Hotel Transylvania 1, 2, and 3. we went through, what was the other one we went through, Meg? We've done Finding Dory and Finding Nemo.
Yep.
We preferred Finding Dory, believe it or not.
Oh.
We've preferred, we're really into The Grinch right now, but we started The Grinch last November, and it has not stopped playing all year round.
Wait a minute, which one, though?
Ah, the animated one.
With Karloff or Cumberbatch?
Cumberbatch.
Ooh, boy, you get the full-length version.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, they don't like the Jim Carrey one. And I'm like...
That's okay.
But it's, no, that's the one. That's the one. Like, you know, I knew that was going to happen.
I believe the ghost of Boris Karloff would like a word with you.
You think?
Yes. It was... Oh boy, that's not Boris right. Karloff.
No.
just mentioning his name brings fear and everything.
I didn't actually know there was an. I didn't even know there was a Boris Karloff.
Oh, actually. There is a CBS special. Okay, here we go. Old guy talking. It was a CBS television staple going back to the 60s. So then, what became a bit was, of course, is taking a 30-minute. Special and stretching it out into not one but now two films. So no, look for it. It would be like trying to make a Charlie Brown Christmas into a full length film.
Oh, by the way, I don't get that. I don't get Charlie Brown.
You don't get Charlie Brown?
I don't. No, I'm sorry, but
wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah, and you like the leaves too, so it's all right.
No, but this is a cultural differentiation. See, like
okay,
like you know. My wife's American, so we go through the, you know, like
this stuff.
No, well, we do because it's a conversation that we like. Oh yeah, we've got to show the kids Charlie Brown's Christmas. And it's like, the only good thing about Charlie Brown's Christmas is the bloody music, because wherever that goes, like, you know, da-da-da-da.
Vince Guaraldi, so yeah.
Yeah. And I've just never been able to grasp the meaning behind the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Okay. So, all right. We all have those. That happens to be yours. So, look in for How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I don't know if it's online. But it's one that, Boris Karloff narrates it, and it's 30 minutes to the point, and it's one of the better things that's out there. It was one of those like Charlie Brown Christmas that they air it every year. Now, granted, I know they're streaming and they take stuff off the networks, and there was a big kerfuffle because ABC wasn't going to show a Charlie Brown Christmas because it went streaming. So PBS picked up the slack. Yeah. So we were, if we do say so ourselves, pat ourselves on the back. But someone's gotta. It's one of those. That should be on your list as far as stuff to look for. So now here's, since you have three kids, when was the last film you and Megan finished as a couple?
Before we fell asleep?
Yes, before you fell asleep.
I don't think we finished one movie. We did.
Okay.
I'm trying to think about, because we've done a lot of miniseries this year. Like, we've done The Crown, we've done Lucifer, we did, what was the other one? Oh, The Queen's Gambit was fabulous.
Oh, okay.
What was the last movie we watched, babe? We can't, the thing is, we can't remember because it's a joke, isn't it? Like, as a parent, you get to this point where it's like we do short, sharp, 30 minutes to an hour. We've got that concentration span.
I get it.
But a movie, it's like, oh, 5 minutes in and Megan's asleep. And then I'm asleep. And then you wake up and he's like,
what was that?
This wasn't the movie we were watching. This wasn't the movie we were watching because we started another two movies. We slept through two movies. It's like,
I get it.
it's been a rough one, but I got to say that I think we've also rehatched a lot of things as well, because like I think when we talk about movies, like Meg is awesome at 80s 90s movies, like she's this encyclopedia of music and movies, and if you ever met my father-in-law, he's hilarious. He's got this amazing sense of humor. So he's introduced me to movies I would have never seen, because you have to always remember, being an Englishman in America, some things have never ever translated,
right?
Some things have never come over the pond, so some movies I've never ever seen.
Give us an example.
Okay, Young Frankenstein.
Wow, man.
Right?
Yeah.
I'd never got to see it until last Halloween, where he came over and he hung out and we watched it. And I got to say, it was like, putting on the roof is now my thing where I shout around the house. You know, it's like, but it's just silly little things like that. It's sometimes in the holidays, I'm taking on traditions that have been built before me, but it's again. What was we watching the other day? It was like, yeah, P.S. I Love You. I'd never seen that movie.
Oh, well, yeah,
you know,
that's.
But it was kind of timely because we were talking about emotions and how you see life after death and someone who's loved you. Because I'm still going over obviously the grief of my dad from last year.
Yeah,
and Meg comes up with these amazing, like, either it's either music, like, or it comes with a movie, and it's like, I didn't know that existed. I didn't know those words meant that in that song.
Okay.
And now I didn't know that's a fantastic way of dealing with a grief or a passing or a missing of somebody. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, as I say, it's just how movies and music reflect that. It doesn't actually. I've always been a beats guy with music. I always go with the beat. I don't listen to the words. I go with the beat, right?
Yep.
Where my wife is the opposite. She listens to every single word, and I never listened to the words of Sarah McLachlan's.
It's the sad animal commercial music.
Yeah, you know, the one where I've got to donate $9.99 a month.
Yes.
Forky the dog.
Yeah.
Right? So that one. And I'd never listened to the music before. And she goes, just listen to the lyrics. And I was like, all I can hear is a woman going, and that's all I can hear. And then all of a sudden I picked up on a lyric. And then I went, oh, my God, that means that. Oh, my yeah. God, that means that. And I'm bawling on the couch. And she's like, yeah, you see. And then it was like another Breaking Benjamin song. I wouldn't listen to Breaking Benjamin for Love the Money. But guess what? She hits me on with this. She hits me with the lyrics. I'd never listened to lyrics before. I'd always listened to music. Boom, 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 boom.
Sure.
I'm a four beats guy. So it was like, wow. And now I get into cheap Hallmark 90s movies.
Oh, geez.
And now I've got the ice cream and the tissues out. It's kind of, it's you know. Because it's those moments that it reflects to you.
Yep.
Right?
I think what since everything has gone haywire, what the film show has become, basically, because, I mean, I still talk about new stuff, or at least, you know, whatever I'm able to get my hands on screener-wise.
Right.
But, I mean, I've gone to you folks and said, post online, post on the Facebook and on Twitter, you know, what you've watched. And the show's become just rattling off titles. And I always say, if you can watch something that's new, or at least new to you, and it sounds like you're getting a wave of new-to-you material. But the other thing I've mentioned, since you mentioned P.S. I Love You, I just got done doing a radio version of It's a Wonderful Life, where I voiced 12 different characters, including the stereotypical,
wow.
including the stereotypical Irish cop, and I'd like to think that I could give Gerard Butler a run for his money in the Irish accent department. He's even made fun of it.
I even sit there, and I'm like, you know, talk about, like, Irish washing. I mean, there's 100 Irish washing actors. I mean, and he's Scottish.
Yeah. I know, and that just added to it.
So, I mean, why couldn't he just been a Scottish guy? You know what I mean? It's like Sean Connery and John Wayne, right, always played the same character, but because they never changed their accent.
Right.
It always worked, right?
Sean Connery was our favorite Russian submarine commander and our favorite
exactly.
Spaniard. Yeah.
Yes. Da.
it's funny. I mentioned I do that analogy. This is another one that you might have to introduce yourself to, and I'll help Megan on this. But I recently got a box set from Time Life Home Video of Dolly Parton. It's like disc upon disc upon disc. Yeah, look for it. And Dolly Parton, in one way cinematically, is like Sean Connery, because if you've ever seen Steel Magnolias.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one not with a Louisiana accent, because she's from Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. But because it's Dolly, you cut her slack. And that's kind
right.
of the Sean Connery treatment with her in that film.
Yeah. And, again, for the international market, we wouldn't really know the difference.
Right.
But it's just a weird thing, isn't it, that they wouldn't. Now I look back onto these types of characters, and it's like, why would you make someone go through this? Well, he's Irish. Well, Scottish is Scottish. Scottish and Irish are pretty similar. I mean, at the end of the day.
But there's no apparently there's no boxer shorts with kilts on them, because there's that one particular moment that the ladies and a few dudes like.
Oh, my God. Have you ever worn a kilt, by the way?
I know. I really want to. And when I went to Edinburgh last year, I, of course, went, even the used ones are really expensive. So anybody who is a kilt maker, my birthday is December 19th, you know, have at it. But
I've worn one for a wedding.
Yes.
And it was a very freeing experience. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm sure it was. Nice breeze.
Yeah. And it's the only time I've ever wanted no one to look at my skirt, you know, because I was the bridesmaid in a wedding. I was my friend switched the roles.
Same here.
I was her matron of honor, and
yep.
And all the bloody kids in the wedding party wanted to keep flicking my kilt up. And
well, you play with fire.
I know. And that's what my date found out with. You know, so,
she's not there, is she? No.
No, she's not.
No, I would love a kill. Absolutely would love a kill. And it just, you know, and of course I need a wedding to go to eventually for something like that. But no, right. It's funny. You mentioned John Wayne, of course. John Wayne played Genghis Khan in a film, in The Conqueror. And you look up John Wayne, Genghis Khan. It's so bad.
But Yul Brynner would have been awesome at that.
Yeah, Yul Brynner, because Yul Brynner was that guy because we didn't know what he was. Although, by the way, he's not everybody's favorite cinematic Cajun when he says he's from Louisiana in The Magnificent Seven. But he was, you know, there were character actors like Yul Brynner, like, you know, Rod Steiger or Anthony Quinn, where you're like, you played it all. You know, you could play everything from this, and it was slightly better than, say, or we go back to Westerns. You know, some of your favorite cinematic Western Native Americans, Burt Lancaster, Paul Newman, Martin Landau. I mean, that's what they did back then. So, Jack Palance, Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds did a couple of films, and one said he had a wig and he felt like he looked like Natalie Wood.
Oh my goodness! So. Well, you know, then you think, well, Charles Bronson would have fitted in any of those roles,
and he did. I mean, he did a handful of those, yeah.
Yeah,
because it was kind of Fu Manchu-ish and not, and, you know. So I'm welcome to racist casting decisions here on Film Sociology, but yeah, I mean, and it's
a time before they really didn't know any better.
There was, what was it, when Idris Elba hosted Saturday Night Live, there was a game show that said, "What could I play?" And it's all casting choices. And near the end of it, it was, you know, final round, what do you think you could play? And he actually said James Bond. And he went, we're not sure about that yet. So
they gave it to a black woman.
Yeah.
And I think that's if you're going to break the mold, they definitely did.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know. I'm still not understanding how that's going to fit, if you get my meaning.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it's, well, if you go into the theory, is it's not one person, it's the title. So
yeah.
I mean, because George Lazenby even said this never happened to the other fellow. So if you want to play the history card,
right.
You know, it's that title, I guess, it's that number.
And that's my favorite James Bond.
Oh yes, yes, and God. So you were also watching that the day Diana Rigg died.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Criminally underrated, criminally underappreciated. Diana Rigg's one of the all-time great Bond girls. The skiing is pretty good. Lazenby does a kilt, of course. Lazenby has a great moment with Caviar. And I have a soft spot for Louis Armstrong, and it's the biggest downer ending in the franchise. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to get more sad than that.
But you know what? It, on Her Majesty's Secret Service made that movie made Bond relatable.
Yep.
Because you actually find him. He finally saw his vulnerability.
Yep.
And that's what that made for me.
Absolutely.
And talking of movies to come,
yes, sir.
Because I'm not now. Did you see T-Net?
No, and I know it just came out on video this week. The last right. here's one for. Do you remember the last film you saw in the theater?
Oh, God.
Maybe.
Yes.
Probably, okay.
Yes, I remember. Actually, it was the last Bond movie.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. My last one was Bad Boys for Life. I really want to I really want to correct that. I wish I could.
Well, you wasted the money on that one, man.
Yeah, I'm afraid I did. Yeah. Well, I didn't know. Who knew? So, but no, Tenet of course is now out on video, and of course Christopher Nolan is on the receiving end of saying that you must watch my film in the theaters, and that turned out poorly. So no, I'll watch it once. We have a critics meeting this weekend, and once I'm done with that, I'm going to finally watch it, because I've liked Nolan's work. He's taken a huge PR hit this year, but I'm excited to see it anyway.
I think, you know, in a film, filmmakers are going to have a really hard time, because if iPhone is trying to convince people to buy an iPhone to make movies on, and then their commercials about movies being made, it's like it, their craft is being diluted.
Yeah.
And then once you take it out of the, again, it's like me saying about cooking and trying to make the cooking school an experience. What he's saying to you is, I've made this movie for the experience of you being in a Dolby Sound environment, right?
Right.
And the same with, I mean, what's the one about the First World War? 1918, they made it, you know. You know, about the Great War. These movies are being made to be epic, like a Baz Luhrmann movie. It wasn't built for your fun.
Yeah.
It was built for seeing on a 64-inch screen in your house because it's beautiful and it's art. And these guys must be fighting that because the budgets are getting smaller.
Yep.
Their acting pool is getting way wider.
Yep.
And so we have to either... You're either going to be historically right, or you're going to be so modern that you can fit everybody in.
Right.
And the storylines. I'm sorry, nobody. Nope. What's going on? Yeah, here you go.
It's all right.
How many? Sorry, we're just counting toast.
That's okay. No, it's but you were mentioning I've seen some films shot on cameras. Those are out there. Soderbergh has done one. Steven Soderbergh has done one. The question is, you can't shoot Lawrence of Arabia on a phone. It's going to be you got to work on your scope. It's going to be hopefully a more intimate story. It's going to be more close up, maybe in your face. But yeah, as far as the giant sweeping David Lean type stuff. You know, that's kind of on hold. I know this past week, Tom Cruise made the news for chewing out his crew, and he's determined to get that movie made and finished. So,
I'm going to come to this issue. I'm not a great Tom Cruise fan, but I've got to tell you this, he's dead right.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's like if someone's in your business and they can put everybody at risk, and an industry is really trying to grapple a situation. He's right. I mean, he may not put it in the most eloquent way, but at the end of the day, you can only pussyfoot around for so long with people. You have to. He took a stand with his crew.
He did.
And he made it for. No one really should feel that he's being a brat or anything. He's not being like a.
It drew comparisons to the Christian Bale rant, but that was.
That's exactly what I was just about to say.
Right, because it was.
Christian Bale was. Him, about him and his character,
yep.
And about you stopping him from working. It's nothing important, really. At the end of the day, someone screwed up a minute of his day.
Yep.
And you know, could you imagine him and Russell Crowe trying to get it right in a movie? Oh my God!
I would.
Wow, that would be intense. And then Daniel Day-Lewis comes along, and goes, "Excuse me, I'm being both of you."
Nice.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I give kudos to him to Cruise on looking out for the safety of his thing, for the industry. Still doesn't believe in psychiatry, but anyway, interesting.
It's like everything has a boiling moment.
Well, everybody, you know what? A gray area is a more fascinating character. So that's us.
Well, again, at least you can see that Tom Cruise has a heartbeat.
Yes, he does.
The bigger thing about him is you never know where the guy is because you don't know, like, if he... I mean, I can't really look at that guy and say, I trust him, okay? But when he speaks, but because he has no emotion. But mm-hmm. to see that emotion and to see that his passion for an industry... And also, everybody's got a job there. You're being employed. You're being... They're keeping this thing going for you. So you've got to show a bit of respect to that, right?
Yep. Yep.
And I really, I kind of respected him for it. I mean, it reminded me a bit of a Gordon Ramsay rant, to be absolutely honest. But, you know, so I was like, hi.
Oh.
No, she's just given me a classic petit foie. Yes, we're in the kitchen now, in the play kitchen. We cook every day together. Yeah, actually, the cool thing about with me and my kids is being at home for so long is like Theo can actually make a smoothie, do breakfast now with me. He whisks the eggs, he goes and gets everything out of the fridge. He's four, and then Nobly,
child labor.
Yeah, well, you know what? What's good for China is good for me.
Oh,
it's been really good to connect with the kids like that. But sorry, back to movies.
Okay,
but. It's I'm just thinking of the last movie I actually just saw, and I saw the all the way, and it was the one that I saw all the way through to the end was Bill and Ted's Last Adventure.
Wait, the latest one or Face the Music? Okay.
Yeah, Face the Music.
Any
I
good?
Call it the Last Adventure. I got to say I just can't see Keanu Reeves old. It's very weird.
It happens. Gordie Howe got old. Of course, Gordie Howe, he still play you.
Yeah, everyone gets old. But the problem with him, it was like, he looked, I mean, obviously he got ready. I mean, by the way,
yeah.
John Wick.
Yes.
Keanu Reeves. I love those. And I'm not a violent type of guy, but he plays it so freaking well.
Mm-hmm.
But then to take him from that, and it's like lean and mean and moody and sophisticated, and you know, and then to Bill and Ted and bloated and a bit wrinkly, it's like, geez, man, like you just made me feel old by looking at you, you know, and that's what I didn't want from the movie, you know what I mean? But
was that one Megan turned you on to?
No, it was everybody was asleep by 9:30 in the house, and I was like, I'm gonna watch something. That I really want to watch myself.
Okay.
And so I went and I wasted it on that. But,
wow.
No, it was like, but you know, sometimes you just want to chill out and you want to just have something stupid to watch.
I just wanted to make sure I didn't want you to miss the subtle nuances from not seeing Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey. So just checking.
I mean, no.
It's not Barely Legal Cheerleaders 21, part 26, you know.
Wow.
Moving on. Wow.
I'm going to say that was probably my last time. I've had some alone time to watch a really, like, something for myself.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go, my friend. I've expanded it then from there. That's my life.
So, well, you can be a part of his life too by going to DannyBoom.com and getting a box of ingredients and cooking with him. So
you can come to. Well, listen. All your friends out there, we've been together for 7 years now, Matt. If you don't know that, you can get me on Instagram on Danny Boom Official. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find Gastronauts Academy everywhere. Please come and join me. Let's have a cookie. Let's meet. You know, your viewers, they're thick and they're out there, man. There's thousands of them, right?
It's a gift for yourself. It's a gift for loved ones, for the chef in your house or in your mind.
Yeah,
all of that.
I'm your personal culinary concierge. Just give me a shout anytime. That's what it is.
He has the jacket and the pencil thin mustache to go with it.
And I might even sing "Be My Guest" with you.
Oh, really?
Be my guest.
Yes. The great myriad of French accents from Ewan McGregor and Jerry Orbach.
Exactly. Yes, it's Cats. I know. Yes.
No, not the musical. No, not that.
No. Well, so just before we go, Matt.
Yeah. Okay.
We did what everybody else did in the pandemic. We bought two kittens to add to our.
Oh my gosh.
And so we have Quinn and Ellis now, and they are, they're actually the most adorable things ever. Every day we like go ah. I did wish we didn't get them, but then at the end of the day you go, oh, the adorable faces. How could we not? You know, they're beautiful cats, and the kids. Don't step on his tail. Literally that. The kids have been amazing with them, and they're amazing with the cats. One looks like a tiger, and one looks like a lion, and they're brothers. They're fantastic.
Oh my gosh! And so now it's six against one, basically. Yep, you know it. Just be dad, part John Wick.
Oh, that's me just getting out of the minivan.
One continuous tracking shot, not a miss move, not a miss choreographed move, absolutely.
So But imagine this, you know, you're grabbing the tote bag, and then you're grabbing the diaper bag, and then you're driving, oh, there's six bottles, water bottles that have been left open, and an open yogurt. The door's about to close. You put your whisk out your right leg. You hold the door open. Then you grab the baby with the other hand. Oh, the bottle's about to fall. Slow motion, quick Matrix type of slow motion backwards. You grab the water bottle, and then your wife goes, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you mean? What am I doing? You know, like... A little help.
Your brain says, I'm fighting off Russian mobsters. And then you say to her, just picking them up, honey.
I'm just picking them up. Stop messing around and get dinner made. Oh, okay.
Yes, dear. Okay. All right, friends. Go to DannyBoom.com and check out the Gastronauts Academy and all the other myriad stuff he's got going online. And, yes, he's on social media. Danny, have a great Christmas and hang in there, pal.
We're doing a wine review next, aren't we?
Yeah. What's next?
What's next? We've got to do something drinking related just to get me through this. So, yeah.
So a Belgian blonde, you say?
Belgian blondes. That's right. Everyone loves a Belgian blonde.
That's another movie title we don't talk about. It used to be the Swedish bikini team. Now it's Belgian blondes. Yeah.
It was that. But actually, okay, there you go. Then the mousetraps, they got away with Belgian hair models. Who came up with that? Who came up with that, Matt?
We'll never tell. So.
We'll never tell. So. Right, my friend. Have a great Christmas, everybody. Christmas all to you, and Kwanzaa to everybody. I love you all.
Love you too, Danny. Take care. Give my best to the family.
All right, my friend. Be good. Right.
Yep.
Bye.
Always something. Always epic. Always good. That's Danny Boom. You can go to DannyBoom.com and check out all the information and support him and his family as they're stuck in the house. Good stuff there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We'll get to the grab a pencil portion of the program in a little bit. Just a programming note. Next week's show, we will be discussing the IFJA award winners, the Indiana Film Journalists Association, of which I am a member. We are having our big secret meeting this weekend, and we'll be announcing them on Monday. They'll get news release will go out on Monday, and of course I'll talk about it on next week's program, which will hopefully get done early because of the holidays. But a film I hope it will be in heated discussion over the weekend is now new on Netflix, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. This is the latest adaptation of the play of August Wilson. Well, a little backstory. Denzel Washington, who's one of the producers on this, committed to producing all 10 of August Wilson's plays, the Pittsburgh series. This was the only one not set in Pittsburgh, but of August Wilson's plays, and bring them to the screen. He did that with Fences, of which he also directed. And now we have Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. As I said, not set in Pittsburgh, set in Chicago in 1927 at a recording session for Ma Rainey, played by Viola Davis, and tensions happen between her and the band and inside the band itself. A solid ensemble performance, of course, from Chadwick Boseman, who's getting a lot of buzz, especially because this is his final performance. Coleman Domingo, Michael Potts, and Glenn Turman. Good to see Glenn Turman, who apparently did this role of Toledo in the revival production of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. So I'm excited that there's going to be more films based on the plays of August Wilson. This time around, it is adapted by Ruben Santiago Hudson, directed by George C. Wolfe. And what was a nice surprise, I guess, for this is, I believe, one of Wilson's shorter plays. They can be very dense and very breaking into aspects of the supernatural as well as the realism of Wilson's world. This one is I think, under an hour 40, and it's tight. Really excellent performances from everybody, especially Boseman and Davis, who will be getting, I think, a lot of the award attention in this one. But probably because it's a singer that I enjoy a great deal, and the interplay between the musicians, that fine line between camaraderie and butting heads like rams. Bozeman's character, a trumpet player who wants to go out on his own, but we also have the aspect of getting the work done. And Davis, as Ma Rainey, is not just playing a diva, but also a very, very shrewd businesswoman. It's a really well done web of conflict and compromise, which sounds like a line from La La Land, because it is. But I really, really enjoyed Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and it's now available streaming via Netflix. Don't miss this. So we get to the grab a pencil portion of the program, and we start via email from my buddy Eric, who starts with his first viewings of last year's film version of Little Women, which he deemed average. Sarah will be with you. Emma will not. As far as his rewatches, Stage Fright from 1950, which he called fair to middling, as well as Strangers on a Train, 1951, which he deems sensational. So thank you, Eric. We appreciate that, as always. And we go to Facebook, my Facebook page. Bob writes, The Prom on Netflix, pure musical escapism for 2 hours, even if it wasn't shot in Indiana. Mike writes, Brazil, several times. Rosanna writes, The Prom. Dawn writes, The Secret, Dare to Dream and Beyond. Daryl writes, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. It is that time of year. Darren writes, A Matter of Life and Death and Hillbilly Elegy. George writes, The King. Joe writes, The Highwaymen, It's a Wonderful Life, Muppet's Christmas Carol, A Christmas Story, TBS's A Christmas Carol, Extremely Dark, Christmas Vacation, Tis the Season, Merry Christmas, Matthew Soucy. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. Daniel writes, Permanent. It was okay. Camille writes, I really got into the Christmas spirit and watched Marley and Me. I haven't cried that hard since graduation. Camille, I am sorry. I'm also sorry for the ad campaign in that film. It's not Beethoven. Not even close. Eric writes, Wonder and A Star is Born, neither of which made me cry. Caitlin writes, Quarantine movies so far have been Prince of Egypt, Knives Out, Snowpiercer, Happiest Season, and Muppet Christmas Carol. Also The Prom. Devin writes, The Prom and The Santa Claus. Zachariah writes, My Night at Maud's, North Fork, Lethal Weapon, Shorts by Laurel and Hardy, and Bad Santa. Corey writes, Happiest Season, I Am Your Woman, and Muppet Family Christmas. Liza writes the Bee Gees documentary, the Bee Gees. I got to get to that one as well. I think that's How Can You Mend a Broken Heart. Tony writes, Loving Vincent. Michael writes, Kentucky Fried Movie. That is a movie of extraordinary magnitude, Michael. You have my gratitude. Lou Harry writes, Greenland, The Father, One Night in Miami, The Nest, The Dig, First Cow. Was Midnight Sun this week? Who knows anymore? Midnight Sky, maybe. Christy writes, Hillbilly Elegy. Vicky writes, Cool Hand Luke and It's a Wonderful Life. Taylor writes, White Christmas, Effie Gray, Downton Abbey, and Deadpool. Todd writes, I had a carry-on movie marathon. Wow, carry-on nurse, carry-on sergeant, carry-on cowboy, and carry-on screaming. Simon, take note of that. Catherine writes, The Shop Around the Corner, The Bishop's Wife, Last Christmas, Lego's Star Wars Holiday Special, Ava, One Magic Christmas, and It's a Wonderful Life. Jared writes, every traditional Christmas movie and special imaginable, and it's been a full week of Rankin Bass, The Grinch, Charlie Brown, and other childhood favorites. Brian writes, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Vicky asks, does the Bee Gees documentary on HBO Max count? So good. Don writes, Down Home Music, Farewell Amour, Horrible Bosses 2, Farmhand, I'm Your Woman, and for the first time, Goodfellas and Raging Bull. Congratulations, Don. Rachel writes The Christmas Chronicles and Home Alone 2. Scott writes Safety, Clouds, and Jingle Jangles. Frank Glover reminded me I sent you my film. Frank, I will get to it, I swear. Stephen writes Funny Boy. And a truly odd one last night, Peter Bogdanovich's Saint Jack. I need to revisit that one. You're right on that, Stephen. Plus last Monday's episode of His Dark Materials. Oh, yeah, and James Whale's The Old Dark House. Thank you, Stephen. Britt writes, Silverado, The Star, Johnny Mnemonic, Jingle Jangle, The Monument Men, Woman in Gold, GBF, The Prom, Ava, The Shining, Popeye, Moana, Die Hard and Die Hard 2, did you see me, Cutthroat Island, Cliffhanger, and Water for Elephants. Dana writes The Bishop's Wife. David writes It's a Wonderful Life, The Christmas Chronicles, and The Grinch. Jamie writes Santa Claus, Santa Claus 2, Live Action Grinch, Alvin and the Chipmunks Christmas Special, Meet Me in St. Louis, Little Drummer Boy, and Nestor. I've been in a Rankin-Bass kind of mood, but it's Christmas time, and that's their best season. Thank you, Jamie. Jeff writes A Most Beautiful Thing. Jed writes, watched War of Ghosts, love the concept, not sure the right ending. Phil writes Mank. Suzanne writes Jingle Jangle, White Christmas, Uncle Frank, and The Prom. Abby writes Fargo and Holidate. Lila writes, finally saw The Bling Ring, and that's all I'm going to say about it. Yeah, and a slew of Christmas movies. Lila, I'm with you on Bling Ring, I understand. Kicked it off with It's a Wonderful Life, then Elf, White Christmas, Scrooge, and watching Auntie Mame today. Don writes, I'm hooked on the first half-hour black and white seasons of Gunsmoke, circa 1956, where Kitty is one tough and gorgeous cookie, and Matt shoots anyone who looks at him cross-eyed. And I believe that's the ones where Burt Reynolds is everyone's favorite blacksmith. Mason writes The Incredibles. Susan writes The Christmas List with Mimi Rogers for the third time and the Santa Claus trilogy. Missy writes Run, White Christmas, some series on Netflix about the Centennial Park bomber, and season one of Cobra Kai. James writes Krampus, Christmas Vacation, and the Christmas Chronicles for parts one and two, and Elf. Maya writes The Happiest Season, Prom, and Moana. Brent writes How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, the Bee Gees documentary, and The Goldfinch. Jessica writes The Prom. Kim writes Hidalgo, Critical Thinking, The Prom, and Finished Emily in Paris. Edward writes The Prom and Jingle Jangle. Craig writes I'm Your Woman. That's a title, folks. Doug writes Lovers Rock, How Do You Mend a Broken Heart, Buena Vista Social Club, For the Love of the Movies, The Story of American Film Criticism, Wattstacks, glad you saw that, The Battle of the Century, George White's Scandals, An American in Paris, Movie, The Prom, She's Back on Broadway, and Mulan. And I'm going to be mentioning Movie at the end of the program. Good timing there, Doug. I know why you did it. Spencer writes, I watched Ava. Can I have that hour and a half of my life back? Spencer, apparently not. Look, they're coming to get you. This coming week, the 1962 Manchurian Candidate, I was once John Frankenheimer's parents' dog walker. Brush with greatness. Cool. Julia writes Yentl, the 1994 Little Women, Meet Me in St. Louis, and Christmas in Connecticut. Dustin writes Meet John Doe, the BBC Play of the Month, The Picture of Dorian Gray, Great Performances, Heartbreak House, Great Performances, Cyrano de Bergerac, Great Expectations from 2013, the miniseries Sinatra, All or Nothing at All, A Homecoming for the Holidays, and The Prom. Julie writes The Big Lebowski, and then a Hitchcock binge of Rear Window, The Man Who Knew Too Much, the second one, the remake, and The Birds. Kathy writes Moulin Rouge, 1953 and 2001. Anthony writes, pick any Hallmark Christmas film. Anne loves them. We have the kiss timed down to at least 15 seconds, and I think the snow is all CGI. Thank you, Anthony. Oh, and The Christmas Carol with George C. Scott, who really doesn't come into his own until the last third of the movie. Well, Anthony, you could say that about just Ebenezer Scrooge as a whole, but I see what you're saying. Sean writes Uncle Frank, Prom, and Ava. Michael writes The Prom and Mindhunter. Joe Shearer writes Star Trek Generations. Yeah. Uncle P-Head. Yeah, I know. Deadpool, Pieces of a Woman, Driveways, One Night in Miami, Game Master, Clementine, The Dose, Red, White, and Blue, and Death Ship. Michelle writes Home Alone, Fat Man, my new favorite adult Santa movie. Let's say grown-up Santa movie as opposed to adult Santa movie. It's not that kind of movie. 51st Dates, Die Hard, Elf, and Death in the Family. Channing writes the Brosnan-Russo Thomas Crown Affair. Yep, I'm with you on that. Jackie writes Come As You Are. Again, a title, not a command. Jay Roch said, rewatch The Hangover, still hilarious every time we watch it. Martin writes, Terminator Dark Fate was disappointing. Play by the numbers rehash of franchise-itis. Some nice surprises early, but had typical Terminator tropes, including the always must be filmed large truck freeway chases. Thank you, Martin. Roxana writes, The Prom. Nick Rogers writes, Mank, The 20th Century, The Boys in the Band, Over the Moon, Black Bear, The Last Out, The Prom, Once We're Brothers, You Cannot Kill David Arquette, Uncle Frank, One Night in Miami, La Dosis, Cats, Greenland, and Beanpole. Nice picture of Bernie Sanders there, Bonnie. Thank you, Doctor. Ed writes, watch the entire Porky's trilogy. Problematic? Yes. However, they showed some surprisingly progressive attitudes at times for a bunch of kids in the 50s, as written by folks in the early 80s. Joni writes, The Crown, What We Do in the Shadows, The Royal Ballet's Nutcracker, the Broadway production of Holiday Inn, as well as She Loves Me, Elf, also part of The Quiet Man, But I Went to Bed. Oh, and one of my favorites, Steamboat Bill Jr. Gary writes, License to Kill, GoldenEye, Frontier Wolf, and Room 43. Janet writes, A Prairie Home Companion, Muppet Christmas Carol, Ricky and the Flash, another film not shot in Indiana, I Love You to Death, It's a Wonderful Life, Carlito's Way, Righteous Kill, and City Hall. Missy writes, Frozen Grounds and The Prom. Michael writes, War of the Satellites, Roger Corman, and Visitor from Venus with Patricia Neal, almost identical to the Day the Earth Stood Still, as well as Emperor and Downton Abbey the movie. Mavine writes, director John Ford's last film, Cheyenne Autumn, with James Stewart playing Wyatt Earp. Yes. Sal Mineo is a hot-headed Native American, along with other notables, Susan Sarandon in Blackbird, Keep Tissues Nearby, and Balloon, based on true events of a family attempts to escape communist East Germany, Edge of Your Seat Tense. Daniel writes, Storm Warning, The Curse of Dracula, The Unsinkable Molly Brown, Satyricon, A Diva's Christmas, The Prom, I'm Your Woman, Let Them All Talk, Mr. Wong, The Fatal Hour, Austin Powers, and The Man Who Came to Dinner. Terry writes, The Last Days of Disco, The Reagans, My Psychedelic Love Story, David Bowie Finding Fame, and Family Album. Linda says, sorry, just The Crown. Nothing to be sorry about, Linda. You watch something. That's cool. Andrew writes, White Christmas and Chef. Maria writes, Muppet Christmas Carol. Jay writes, The Gentleman and that Hulu Christmas thing with Kirsten Stewart. Thank you, Jay. Grace writes, X-Men and finishing X-Men 2 tonight. Abby writes, Home Alone. Aaron writes, I watched Christmas Vacation, White Christmas, and Happy Birthday, Bill, a fun story about me getting my husband Bill's birthday mentioned in a radio show. Well, keep trying, Aaron. Yeah, maybe it'll work next time. Amy writes, 1917. I wasn't going to watch it. My husband was watching it, but the story pulled me in, and the one long shot seemed impossible to do, yet there it was. And the true story element, it hit me deeper level. Hit me on a deeper level than I was expecting. Great movie. It's technically really, really cool. Look for the cuts next time you watch it. It's fun. Larry writes, Hog Wild, Laurel, and Hardy at their early talky best. Greg writes, The First Line on Netflix. And finally, Tom writes, Michael Mann's The Last of the Mohicans, Ingmar Bergman's The Magic Flute, The Goonies, and Stan and Ollie. And there you go. That's what you've been watching this week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another out there. And hope you are able to discover films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. I know we are knee-deep in holiday movies, as well as award screeners for certain members of the Indiana Film Journalists Association. As I mentioned, I'll go over the awards on next week's program. I'm hoping we can get it done before Christmas. We'll just have to see how it falls. into place. I want to end today's show by raising a glass to actor Jeremy Bullock, best known as the original Boba Fett, as well as actress and dancer Anne Reinking, best known for stage work including Chicago, Coco, Pippin, and even though she only did a handful of films, very notable. Movie, which I need to revisit with George C. Scott, of course, was great in All That Jazz. One of the best things about John Huston's film version of Annie, and the underrated Dudley Moore comedy Mickey and Maude with her and Amy Irving. So here's to you, Anne. Miss you already. All right. So until next time. Have a great holiday. Well, have holiday season, and we'll do the show again next week. Take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!